This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, look, I guess I should be flattered. People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening, that I'm a decent man or however it's phrased. That, you know, that's why they're coming, because no, Biden's a good guy.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Of course, that was the president yesterday. You and I at this time didn't get a chance to talk about it. I did dive into the press conference a little bit later in the broadcast, but we've got a lot to get into today. I thought we would touch on some of the big news stories that are affecting the country and want to bring you into the know. Dr. Paul Kengor will be stopping by in a few minutes, and then I'm going to speak to a physician today. I really hope you'll hang out with me. You know, Holy Week is right around the corner, and I know Relevant's going to have some phenomenal programming for you, but Dr. Thomas McGovern's going to be stopping by, and we'll take a look at the passion of Jesus through the eyes of a physician. How did Christ die? Was it excessive blood loss? Was it stress? Was it heart failure? Was it asphyxiation? How did he die? We'll take a look at that. We'll take a look at what he went through. It's going to be fascinating. So join me for that and a whole lot more. The chaplet coming up in an hour. And speaking of divine mercy, I was just talking with Patrick Alok, who's on my board today. And he's saying at Mass today, Drew, Father Rocky said that 70% of the books are gone. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that many is gone. I have to say, I'm really humbled by the whole process. I'm deeply grateful to Relevant Radio for their overwhelming support of this endeavor. And I know that God's going to bless not just this apostolate, but he's going to bless you for getting the book, because it's a great book. I try to be humble. I try to pray for humility. And I'm not saying this out of vanity, but I do think it's a good book. I mean, I know Divine Mercy pretty well. You know, I've been studying it for three decades. You know, I was there when Faustina was raised to the altars. You know, I prayed at her tomb multiple times. I've spent hours with the foremost experts in the world. I've met people who were miraculously cured and had encountered Jesus through the divine mercy in profound ways. And I put that in this book. And there's a lot of books out there, and there are some books that really are laser focused on aspects of divine mercy that are just brilliant. And I in no way don't want to diminish them, because I think you can't get enough of divine mercy. But this is a great introduction. This is a great overview of God's mercy, of trust. It's a great overview of the life of Faustina and her spiritual director and all the treasures that God has given to us through divine mercy. If this is new to you and you're hearing about it for the first time, I know you might just be stumbling on this. This is a free book for you. It's 140 pages deep. It has prayers. It even has a Divine Mercy card in it. And next week, I'm probably not going to be talking very much about it, but we're in the home stretch right now. As I said, limited quantities. We're 70% of the way through them. And I just want to put this on your radar. If you have not gotten it yet, relevantradio.com. That's all you have to do. Relevantradio.com. Go now. It'll take you about 15 seconds, and you can get your book, okay? In fact, the shipping and handling is paid and covered. Well, you don't have to pay a thing. There's no shipping, no handling, no strings attached. We just want you to encounter God's mercy. We want you to have these prayers. We want you to learn about the chaplet. We want you to understand the image. We want you to be prepared for the great feast of mercy. We want you to have all these things. You will be blessed. You will be glad you did it. Just imagine, after having this book and read it, sharing it now with somebody others, knowing you're spreading the message of mercy. So do it now. Go relevantradio.com. Use your mobile app as well. I think I'm sure you can get it on your mobile app as well. Take just a couple seconds. And then call your sister or your brother or your child or your husband or your colleague or your neighbor or the church or whoever it is and say, hey, this book is for free. But they're going quickly. Limited portions. When they're gone, they're gone. So this is it. This will be your last chance. Well, I shouldn't say today's your last chance. There's only 30% of the books left. So that's good news. And I'm really happy about that, because I want as many souls as possible to know this. Why? Why is the book free? Because my treasure's in heaven. You know, I know we all live in this world, and look, we all have electric bills to pay and mortgages and insurances and dentist bills and doctor bills and whatever other bill, food bills, whatever else that life throws at you, right? None of that matters, because we only live a couple decades, right? 60, 70, 80 years, 90 if you're really lucky. I mean, life is so short. It's fleeting. And some people don't even live that long. You only take with you what you send ahead. And what I mean by that is your charity, your acts of kindness and mercy, the times you forgave, the times above all that you loved. Christ spoke very eloquently in Scripture about building your eternal treasure, you know, where moth and rust cannot eat or devour it, right? What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul. Something we should think about, because so often we worship at the altar of mammon, don't we? It's all about our retirement. It's all about how many zeros we have at the end of that number in our bank account. It's all about that earthly and temporal security. Oh, you need that. Mm-hmm. I can't rest. You know how many people I've known have worked their off? You know what I mean? They have worked their butt off. And they leave it to their kids or to somebody else or to a charity. I mean, you slave away for 70, 80 years of your life, you know, you slave away for 60, 70. Let's say you retire somewhere in that range. You think, oh, I'm going to have 20, 30 years to enjoy this. Maybe, if you even have that long. I saw a guy one time who talked about this. He showed me a length of rope, and he says, this is your life, right? And he showed you, you know, how long you work for your retirement, how short it is, but how long eternity is. It goes on and on and on. Work for eternity, not for those few years that you're going to have when you finally say, ah, I have enough. Hey, let's talk about what's happening in the world today. In fact, there is good news for you as a Catholic and other people of faith who live and worship, actually in Washington, D.C., and I'm so glad to broadcast in that wonderful city. A federal judge has ruled that the city's ordinance restricting the capacity of places of worship to just 25% of the capacity, you know, or a maximum of 250 people. You know what they decided? They said that's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional. The ruling came after the Archdiocese of Washington sued the city because the city imposed those restrictions on houses of worship, but they lifted them on other places, right? They lifted them on places of commerce. So, you know, if you go to Target or Walgreens or Whole Foods, that's okay. You can have as many people as you want. Come on in. No problem, right? You're going to go to church and worship? No way. There's a limit on how many people you can have, and we got to keep it to 25% of the capacity, right? So silly. I mean, it's so myopic, really, if you think about that. So, well, the largest church in North America, that's the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception there in D.C., it was only allowed to have 8% of its capacity. 8%, because they limited it to 250 people. That's the max, right? So that's not quite as bad as San Francisco saying that there can only be one person inside a church at a time. Remember that? It's close. I mean, what's San Francisco? Come on. So the judge noted in his decision that the limit on the houses of worship would not apply, and I want to quote him here saying this, if they hawked wares instead of proclaimed the gospel. All right, well, bravo. Well, that decision follows the state of Minnesota's court-forced decision to lift all restrictions on churches and synagogues and mosques as long as they follow social distancing requirements. And you know, other states may also come in along, I think, with those rulings as well. So, 800, Patrick's telling me right now on my headset, we're allowed in the Basilica out of 10,000. Yeah, Patrick, that's crazy, isn't it? That's unbelievable. Patrick's my, I call him my Rain Man. He does all the mathematical computations for me. Thank you. Hey, have you heard about what's happening in the Suez Canal? I'm sure you have. This is a weird story, right? A gigantic container ship called the Ever Given. It got stuck in the canal on Tuesday. And you think, okay, well, big deal. We'll get a couple barges in there and pull that thing out, right? It apparently got blown by a wind. And these winds were driven by sandstorms. And it's the first time in the canal's 152 years of history that a ship has gotten stuck like this. World trade is grinding down to a halt as this ship is blocking a major, major trade route. Listen to this report from NBC.
Stunning pictures of the massive ship weighing 2,000 tons, carrying as many as 20,000 containers. Seen from above, longer than the length of four football fields, wedged across a canal just two football fields wide.
The ship is actually taller than the Empire State Building if you laid it on its side.
The cause, the ship owners say, stormy weather, adding, we sincerely apologise. This image shows the Ever Given as seen from the vessel behind, and there are many, many vessels waiting behind. This video apparently shows a traffic jam of massive container ships. The numbers set to increase by 50 a day. The Suez Canal, cutting across Egypt in North Africa, is the most direct route between Europe and the North Atlantic to the Indian Ocean and Asia. It is an artery of the world economy, and this morning it is blocked. Work to unblock it, a David and Goliath effort, using tugs and clearing mud and sand.
It's like putting a pencil in a small cup and then it gets jammed at the bottom. No matter what you do to get it out, it's hard to do.
This morning, the ship's Japanese operator says it hopes to free the vessel within days. The impact on the world economy contained for now, experts say, but for the world of container ships, an ever-worsening headache.
It's such a weird story. I mean, it's just so weird. I saw that story the other day or the day before that. I thought, I'll look at that thing. At 152 years, people have been going in and out of that Suez Canal. First time in a century and a half that a ship's got stuck like that. You know, what are the odds? Problem is, as you heard in the report, about 10% of the world's commerce goes through this canal on an annual basis. So it's blocking, just in terms of numbers, about $400 million worth of goods an hour. Can I rephrase that? Can I restate that for you? $400 million worth of goods an hour is being blocked. As of yesterday, there's a line of about 150 ships waiting to get through the canal, and officials are concerned that it could be more than just a couple of days to get it out. The U.S. Navy is apparently sending an assessment team to look it over as well, so some of those ships could be rerouted around the Cape of Good Hope at the bottom of Africa. A detour that typically adds, I think they say something like 14 days. It's 5,000 nautical miles to that voyage. And we'll see what happens. The farmers, one other story here. Then I want to talk with Dr. Paul Kengor, who is standing by to join us as well. One other piece of news that may affect you, and it's something to consider. We talked a lot about COVID over the past year. Vaccines were a big issue. Well, the pharmaceutical company Moderna, one of the COVID-19 vaccine makers, Pfizer, Moderna were the first out of the gate. They're looking at developing something that I think people are going to be pretty excited about. It's a dual flu/COVID-19 vaccine, if you will. And they're going to use the same technology, that same mRNA technology that they use with COVID. Right now, flu vaccines are pretty much, they're hit or miss. I mean, the odds, I get my physical annually, and the doctor always says, "Do you want a flu shot?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" Right? But sometimes they're 14% effective, 16%. I mean, it's hit or miss depending. They're taking a gamble what variant of flu you're going to get. So you take this, you might not have it. Maybe that's low. Patrick's asking me. Do me a favor, Patrick. Look that up. What is this year's flu vaccine's efficacy rate? It'd be interesting to see. I mean, flu's been way down this year. But it's pretty low. At 40% maybe, it's not off the charts. I'm no physician. I'm just saying that it's 45%. Okay, so it's less. It's less than half. So you have a 45% chance of getting this right. So the CEO of Moderna claims that using this new method, and this is great news, it could be far more effective at not just dealing with COVID, but eliminating the flu. And I bet the efficacy rate would be a lot higher than 45%. But look, if you're like millions every year that take the flu vaccine, you'll probably like this news. Here's a little bit more. Dr. Jeanette, I think her name is Neshawat. She's from Fox News. She was reporting on this earlier. Listen.
They say about 1 or 2 years it could possibly be on the market. Of course, it has to get FDA approval. But this is really incredible because, both flu and COVID are respiratory illnesses. And it makes sense to combine the two of them and have it as a 2-in-1 vaccine, like we see, for example, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, or the tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis vaccine. So it's common to combine vaccines together. And fortunately, about 200 million Americans every year get their flu shot. So maybe they'll be more likely to get their flu and COVID shot together. And what does that mean? Saving lives and less hospitalizations.
Well, there you go. Bill Gates, I saw a report on him earlier today regarding this. He did an interview with a Polish paper, and he said, when it comes to COVID-19 and the situation we're currently in, even with all these vaccines that are now out there, he says it's probably going to take, he thinks somewhere into late next year before things get back to normal. I'm seeing more traffic on the roads. I'm seeing more people flying. I'm seeing more restaurants full. So I'm hoping he's wrong. I hope it's a lot earlier than that, but we'll see. I don't think we'll be completely rid of the disease until we get this herd immunity, and that's a whole nother conversation. Hey, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the country as well with our president. I saw a great op-ed this morning. I should share it with you. I want to be politically, I don't want to say be politically correct. I want to be politically charitable when it comes to comes to the president. And there was a piece that was written by a guy named Robert Smith that I read a little bit earlier today. And it was a great piece. He talked about Biden and he raised the question, is he unfit? And look, I don't want to be partisan here, but he raised a lot of questions about what came out of this presser, what the optics were for foreign powers, the cognitive capabilities of the president, who's pulling the strings behind the scenes, what reporters were chosen. There's a lot to talk about here. And again, we can get into some of that. But I don't know if you caught the press conference yesterday. The president, he went off target. He lost his train of thought. He insisted that timing is everything, ignoring very important questions about what he's going to be doing about gun control, and instead he deflected to talk about infrastructure. I mean, it was kind of weird in some areas. He seemed cogent at some points, and I got to give him credit. He was clear in some areas. But others, I was like, ooh, what is he saying? Reporters in the room gave him a lot of leeway. I mean, there was no freewheeling calling on the president, as you normally see at press conferences. You know, the very first, McEnany, who's the press secretary for Trump, somebody said that she went back and looked at the very first question that Donald Trump was asked in his press conference. You know what it was? Why did you lie to the American people? No softball. I mean, that was a bullet, right? I mean, and that set the table, so to speak, for everything that the president would have. And I saw today earlier some of his earlier press conferences, and he was engaging. He took any question, whether he liked it or not, and answered in the Trump-esque way that he did. President Biden was very methodical about who he picked and who he did not pick, and what he answered, and had his talking points that he often referenced. In fact, the New York Post obtained photos showing he was kind of using a crib sheet and had headshots of all the reporters that were there circled and numbered in terms of who he's going to call on and when. And you know, even the Washington Post was not impressed, and not just with the president, but also with their colleagues in the press. So not a single reporter at the Biden's first presidential news conference asked about the pandemic. So that was one of the headlines that we saw. I'm joined right now by regular contributor Dr. Paul Kengor. He's a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, longtime friend of this show, the author of the book The Devil and Karl Marx. It's one of a number of his great reads, and you'll be satisfied with whatever book you pick up. And it's always good to talk with him. Doctor, thanks for your patience today. Thanks for hanging out. It's good to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. You know, you were talking about the vaccine, and so I did a quick look on this, and there are now currently 30 million cases in the United States. The death toll is 546,000 in the United States. And after waiting at least 2 months for our new president to hold his first press conference, he doesn't get asked a single question about the pandemic, which is pretty amazing, pretty disgusting.
That's what he ran on, right? That's what he ran on.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. That's what he ran on. And you know, one thing that they might have asked him is, you know, in the final presidential debate, you stood there with Donald Trump and who was the debate moderator, Drew? I think it was Kirsten Welker.
Yep.
And she asked President Trump if he thought that there could be a vaccine by the end of the year, by December 31st, 2020. And Trump said yes. Trump made a guarantee. And then as he did that, Biden scoffed, rolled his eyes, laughed, snickered, said there's no way there's going to be a vaccine by the end of the year, not until sometime next year. And before the end of the year, Drew, Joe Biden was in Wilmington, Delaware, with his wife, Jill, rolling up his sleeve, getting his first injection of Pfizer vaccine. So, you know, everything he said there was wrong, and he has not been asked to, he hasn't been held accountable for it. And unlike Donald Trump, who was holding press conferences daily on COVID-19 and criticized for not doing enough, not saying enough, you know, Biden doesn't have to say literally anything to a single reporter for the first 2 months of his presidency. Well, the death toll here, it says it's up 1,270 deaths from yesterday. And he doesn't get asked a single question. And, of course, why would the liberal media ask him a question on this? Because it's really their job, whether they admit it or not, to be front men, front women for the Democratic Party. It is a partisan press. It's not a real press. And, you know, whether they do it intentionally or unintentionally, this is what they do. And it's I find it really disgusting, and it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch. It's really sickening.
Yeah, no, I could not agree with you more on that point. And it was, what, 64 days, 65 days, 63 days? It was some incredible length of time before he went before the cameras. And again, it was not freewheeling. The press did not have the ability to ask any question they wanted when they wanted. And I don't know. I mean, he held his own a little bit. He looked good. But at the same time, I was talking to somebody earlier today just about, you know, how sharp he was, even if you back up 8 years, you know, how vigorous and how passionate, how articulate he was. He's a very different person today. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he's using these crib notes, the you know, little cheat sheets here and stumbling through this type of stuff. What's that say to you know, the Vladimir Putins and the Xi Jinpings and, you know, the world leaders in terms of his capability? Do you think anybody interprets that, or that it's not a big deal?
Oh, yeah, they're watching closely. And I think you put it well. So you said there were times that he seemed cogent, but also times when he went off target and seemed to lose his train of thought. And I think that's exactly right. And, you know, Drew, I've watched Joe Biden going back over 30 years. I mean, going back to the 1988 presidential campaign when he was forced out because he plagiarized from Neil Kinnock, the British Labour Party leader. I remember him in the Robert Bork hearings that would have been around 1986-87. I remember him, you know, him and Ted Kennedy in the Robert Bork hearings together, the two Catholics. Yeah, basically railroading Robert Bork because he thought that you know, Roe v. Wade was not constitutional because there's no mention of abortion in the Constitution, and he was exactly right about that. And Bork was basically,
Doctor, I'll tell you, hold the thought. I have to take a short pause here. When we come back, we'll pick it up. We'll talk more. You can join us, too. Feel free to dial in. Our conversation continues right after this.
Insight and analysis you won't find anywhere else. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is good to be here with you. We'll pray the chapel coming up in about 30 minutes. So set your watch, call your loved ones. I love doing that with you. Yeah, I'm talking today with Dr. Paul Kanger. We're just doing some post-analysis of our president and the message he communicated to the country. It was 60-plus days, over 2 months since his inauguration, that he addressed the press. And again, pre-selected press people. You could see that on the sheet that he had circled and numbered. And, you know, there was no talk of the pandemic. And I read a piece earlier today called The Unfit President. I'm going to try to find out where that I saw that. But, you know, the journalist or the person who wrote this particular piece raised some really, I thought-provoking questions, at least for me. And you know, the president, I said, was cogent at times. Other times he was, you know, he left the farm. I was thinking, what are you saying, right? And he points out that, you know, our nation's enemies, you know, with plenty of help from the Biden administration, perceive a weakness with the United States right now. I mean, Biden at times looks frail, you know, practically checked out, and is regarded almost as an open invitation, this guy makes the case for, to China and Russia and Iran to push for advantages. You know, the administration's, you know, paper tiger approach to China, the Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, you know, had his head handed to him last week. You know, we're in an interesting and I think a very concerning time right now in terms of the international affairs. I just hope as a nation we can lead. I mean, morally, the optics here where you see this division in the country, you see people marching in the streets, the issue of race coming up. And what does that send to the rest of the world? What are the optics there? And what does our leadership say, you know, with their particular agenda? Of course, we got Senator, you have Vice President Harris on the sidelines. And this gentleman also made the case. I was telling Dr. Kengor this during the break, that she is president in training right now. You know, that she is the president in training. Will the president, as he said, going to run for a second term, will he make it through his first? A lot of questions. I don't have all the answers to them. But, Doctor, I'd love your analysis on that. I know you and I were talking during the break about that. You were also sharing a little bit about Joe Biden and Bork and so many other things. So you could pick it up on that or any issue you want to.
Sure. Yeah. Well, good question. Will Biden make it through the first term? And I mean, I was in Washington last week and talking to people, both the conservative and the liberal side. And it's funny, Drew, the people that I talk to, they say that the buzz in Washington is that he absolutely is not going to run for a second term. I mean, no one's quite sure how this is going to come about, how it's going to happen. Would he step aside, and would Harris effectively be president? I mean, Biden's already called her President Harris, right? In one of those moments where he's just kind of standing up there talking and then doesn't even notice that he calls her President Harris. So she's really the president in waiting. And I was saying, I've watched him going back to 1988, late 1980s, the presidential campaign in 88, Robert Bork, Clarence Thomas, and the Anita Hill situation. And Drew, he was always sharp. Yeah, I mean, he was a quick thinker.
He was, yeah.
He was witty. He was funny. He had this dynamic personality. The way that he went after Bill Clark, right? Reagan's aide in 1981. It was snooty, snotty, sarcastic, kind of classic bad boy Joe Biden. But the one thing about it was he was sharp, right? So to see him now, kind of just almost kind of methodically walking through these things, and you get the feeling that now with the way he talks and handles himself, he's kind of hanging in there, right?
Yep.
And he's kind of plodding through, and it's not that bad. He does kind of go off target. He seems like he might be losing his train of thought, but then he kind of quickly recoups, and then he seems but you got to wonder 2 years from now, right? And this is a big drag. Here we are, March 2021. This is a big drop off from March of 2020.
Yeah. Oh,
from
yeah. Oh,
March
yeah.
of 2019, right? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I don't know. I really don't think he's gonna make it through the first term. And when he's accidentally saying President Harris, there's something to that. I mean, she is, and this is why a lot of people, including a lot of Catholics, right, didn't want to vote for Joe Biden because mm-hmm. they feared Kamala Harris because of what she did in California, what she did to David DeLeiden.
Yeah.
I mean, David DeLeiden blows the whistle on Planned Parenthood's fetal parts business, which he ought to be a hero for, and people like Kamala Harris persecute him, prosecute him over it. And then the moment she had with was it Judge Butcher, I think is his name, asking about this organization you belong to called the Knights of Columbus, this all-male society. Did you know, sir, when you joined this group that they don't support marriage equality? Right?
I know, silly.
And she's angry. She's a scowl. You do not want this person, especially as a Catholic, to be president.
Yeah.
But this was the risk. This was one of the big risks.
I know.
And I think we're looking at it right now, increasingly day to day. Well, I don't see him making it through 4 years.
Well, that's why I say all the time. Look, I pray for him every day, and I mean that sincerely.
Sure, yeah.
I really do. He is our president right now. And I pray his health is sustained, and I hope those Catholic seeds that were planted in his early formation take root and somehow will guide him. I mean, his position on life and sexuality and marriage and everything could not be more wrong and more diametrically opposed to what our Catholic faith teaches. So let's pray for his conversion. Let's pray for the same thing for Kamala Harris. There are questions about the 25th Amendment, too, Doctor, to your point of him being perhaps, cognitively in decline. Todd in Lexington, Kentucky, I think, wants to ask a question about that. Todd, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Dr.
Hey,
Kenmore.
Todd.
I can remember back when Nancy Pelosi talked about trying to use the 25th Amendment against President Trump, and this was during was it last summer, perhaps, and I kept thinking then, because President Biden was kind of, as they kept saying, he was in the basement. And I kept thinking, is she really trying to throw this out that the 25th Amendment is something that can be used, and that they may really be looking at using it on Joe Biden with the very
That's
purpose
right.
of taking someone who's unelectable
yep.
and she becoming the president of the United States.
Well, Todd, let me jump in on that point for before you ask the doctor a question. To that point, I mean, when Nancy Pelosi came out and addressed the 25th Amendment and President Trump was still in office, people all thought, you're right, that she might want to use this against the president. She said, no, this has nothing to do with the president. The voters will determine his future, she said. But to your point, and doctor, you can pick up on that, was there the thought that, okay, our front guy right now is Joe Biden? There's a guy named Dan Bongino who was a former U.S. Secret Service agent, and he says he's got contacts within the White House. And again, I don't have any other information other than what this man is saying, and please take it for what it is, you know? But he says that there is talk within the White House that there is concern about the fitness, the capability of the president, and what we're seeing, you know, coming across the media cameras is a lot different than really what's happening behind those closed doors. So the 25th Amendment now becomes, it's not a talking point yet, but it is something a lot of people are beginning to whisper about. Your thoughts on that at the Todd's point?
Well, I remember, Drew, doing your show at the time, and we were talking about Nancy Pelosi and the 25th Amendment, and callers called in that day. Exactly that point, right? That you know, this could be used instead for somebody like Joe Biden, because I mean, Donald Trump, for however you want to criticize him, and however liberals wanted to criticize him, you could not criticize the man on physical grounds, right? I mean, this guy was a physical phenomenon. I mean, the man's energy level was incredible. And Donald Trump was saying over the last few months that if Joe Biden had been president over the past year, you wouldn't have a COVID vaccine for 5 years, right? You know, Donald Trump, Operation Warp Speed, you got one within 8 to 9 months. You know, Donald Trump himself operated on warp speed. I mean, the guy hardly slept. The guy doesn't take caffeine. The guy doesn't drink. Also, Drew, I don't think he exercises. I don't know where all this energy even comes from. I mean, the guy is absolutely amazing. But with, you know, Biden is the anti-Trump when it comes to physical activity. So yeah, and I'm sure Nancy Pelosi would deny that in any way she was thinking about Joe Biden in that case. But ironically, that may be where we end up with that. And by the way, I wanted to make a point, sure, too, on the vaccines that you were talking about. I have this data in front of me right here. Mm-hmm. So 30 million Americans have tested positive. Right. Okay. 30 million Americans have tested positive for COVID. 87 million Americans, or 26% of the population, as of today, have received one dose of vaccine, okay?
Wow.
And 47 million have been fully vaccinated, okay? And now think about this. 87 million had one dose of vaccine, which is a quarter of the population. Actually, ignore the quarter of the population point, because the kids in the population don't even need a vaccination, all right? What this is telling us is that we are very close to herd immunity. We are very close to a huge number of people who've either had COVID or have been vaccinated for it. And so this is going to finally flatten out, even though, yes, people are still getting sick and will continue to get sick. So Joe Biden was so bailed out by Donald Trump and Operation Warp Speed and those vaccine efforts that he really doesn't need to be asked about the pandemic right now. In fact, maybe the reporters understand that. They don't even need to bother asking Biden about the question. Although, then again, did you see a couple of days ago when Ted Cruz did a press conference?
Oh, yeah.
And the reporters said,
I loved it.
You're not wearing a mask, Senator Cruz, right? And
yeah.
Cruz said, well, I've been vaccinated, dude, right?
Hey, so if you don't right? like it, back up, right?
Right.
I've been
vaccinated, right? So, but it is.
Let me run this. Patrick says he's got the clip. For those who didn't hear this, here's the exchange between Senator Cruz and a reporter trying to. You don't have it. Oh, I thought you had that one. Okay, well, go ahead, doctor. I'm sorry. He's got Patrick pulled up a different clip. That was a great exchange, though, because
yeah.
that reporter tried to shame him for not having that mask on, and yet he is.
Right.
He's been vaccinated, and he said, "Well, if you don't like it, then back up."
I watch our local news reporters out of Pittsburgh and some of the other local stations, and you know, they'll be on site at some building somewhere where something happened, and they've got their mask on, right? And it's like, you know, this is nothing but political correctness. There's you and the cameraman who's probably 20 feet away from you. There's not a person within 500 yards of you, and you're just doing this for the cameras. Don't be so disingenuous, right?
Yeah.
But another kind of phony thing that, that the media does. But back to my point, so at least so we've got 87 million Americans right now have received at least one dose of vaccine. And then 30 million cases. And let me say something else. Of that 30 million cases, that is way, way, way underreported. Yeah. I can name for you 50 people, probably off the top of my head, who were COVID positive from families that we know of who never got tested.
Yeah, it's such that's such a great point. Let me jump in on that because my our chief executive officer, Father Rocky, sent me an email the other day from the Wall Street Journal. I subscribe to it and I read it every day. And they raised the question, herd immunity is near, despite Dr. Fauci's denial. And Father Rocky asked me, what do I think about that? I thought about it. I spoke to another infectious disease doc, and this doc said to me, you know something? He says, I think we're on the verge of herd immunity for most of the known variants that are out there. Maybe the Brazilian and the South African, not so much yet, but we're getting there. He says, however, you know, there is a distinctly different, you know, we could have some sort of other mutant variant emerge, and we could have another serious wave. That's a possibility to Fauci's point. However, these vaccine manufacturers, they're working on variant vaccines, and we're going to get boosters very much like the flu shot. And, you know, once somebody has recovered from that viral strain, that they're going to have less severe, issues if they have any at all. Plus, there are a lot of people who've had it that are not even in the mix right now, that may have immunity for this. So I think we're getting very, very close to herd immunity. But your thoughts, I'll let you pick up on that as you were making your point.
Yeah. So 30 million reported positive cases, it's way higher than that. I mean, I know many people who one person in the family went and got tested and tested positive, right? Like a family of 7, 8, 9. These are like Catholic families that I know, right? Yeah. And then everybody else in the family, Drew, had like loss of taste, loss of smell, maybe not a fever, maybe not even a temperature, a little bit of coughing, but the rest of them got tested. But they all know that they got it because the one person tested positive and everyone else had the symptoms. So you have a family of 9 people, one of them tested positive and that's it. But the other 8 all had it. So you know, you got 30 million confirmed cases, but it's going to be way higher than that. So I mean, we're definitely at the very least on the verge, if not at herd immunity. Now, let me say this. A good friend of mine here at Grove City College lost his dad last week to COVID at the age of 80, which is my father's age. My father is 81. So you know, this is one of those late cases of somebody who just got it in the last 6 weeks and is dead from it. So it's still something that you have to take seriously. But most of the population, we're at the point, most of the vulnerable population is pretty close to vaccinated or herd immunity. And I think we'll certainly be there, I would imagine, by like June.
Right. All right. Well, let me do this, Doctor. I need to take a short pause. When we come back, we got a lot more to talk about. A couple governors doing some crazy things in the country. We'll talk about that. We'll take your calls, too. If you want to join us, toll free, 888-914-9149. Our conversation will continue right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show. The issues that matter most right here on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, keeping you abreast of all that is happening in your world, in the country, and, of course, in the church. It's good to be with you today. And, look, I just want you to be in the know. I want to give you a rational, clear-thinking approach to so many of these very confusing and difficult issues. Nobody wants to hurt anybody's feeling. Everybody wants to get along, right? Love is love. Science, science. You see those things that are out there. Well, this stuff can get pretty muddy. I'll share with you what's happening here. My guest is Dr. Paul Kengor. And I don't know how you might be burnt out with the news, and I understand if you are. Let me just tell you what happened in South Dakota. There's a governor there who really, I thought at one point, was a rising Republican star. She's looking at the possibility now, I think, of having that star set pretty quickly. she was a stalwart conservative, really, one who would not back down even when pressured by the federal government. For instance, you know, they wanted to pressure her to clamp down on businesses in her state because of the coronavirus. And, you know, she put through good laws, great laws, in fact, restricting abortion even further than the state already had. And I thought, man, bravo, that's what we need. We need people who can stand up for these moral values. She's spoken out against this whole transgender agenda that we're seeing. But, and I put a big but there, when push came to shove, she apparently capitulated. The legislature passed a bill just like the one that Arkansas's Governor Hutchinson signed yesterday that would prohibit males from playing on girls and women's sports teams, right? That only makes sense to me. That's common sense. That's rational, right? But when it got to her desk, Governor Noem sent it back to the legislature with some changes that she wanted that would gut the bill for Catholic athletes. For college athletes. You know, I'm thinking this through a Catholic lens. I'm thinking, my gosh, what the heck is the matter here? She's getting a lot of pushback because of that. And we'll see what happens. So I'm a little disappointed in her there. Patrick, we've got the audio. Let's play this before we go back to Dr. Kanger. I'll share a little bit. I think she was on Tucker Carlson the other night, and Patrick pulled this audio. And here's her rationale. You can hear why she chose not to do it. Then I want to share with you what Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise did as well. So listen to this.
Governor, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it. So here you have this bill, which I think all polling shows is popular in your state. I think it would be popular nationally. You said you were excited to sign it. Big business intercedes NCAA, Chamber of Commerce, and Amazon and tell you not to sign it, and you change your mind. I think a lot of our viewers are wondering your thinking on this and how exactly this happened.
Well, that's not true, Tucker, and thank you for inviting me to be on the show tonight.
Of course.
I could sign the bill the way that it is today, but it wouldn't solve the problem, and that's the real issue. As I looked at the bill and examined it and have been discussing with legal scholars for many months on how to protect women's sports, this bill would only allow the NCAA to bully South Dakota, and it would actually prevent women from being able to participate in collegiate sports. So what I've done is I've asked the legislature through a style and reform.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but just for our viewers, I'm so sorry.
The bill.
Can you just back up for one sec? For our viewers who haven't followed this as closely, how would this bill prevent women mm-hmm. from playing in South Dakota, if you would?
Because what it would do is it would put a law on the books that would allow the NCAA to take punitive action against our state. And we're a small state, Tucker. We've had to fight hard to get any tournaments to come to South Dakota. When they took punitive action against us, we would have to litigate. And legal scholars that I have been consulting with for many, many months say that I would very likely lose those litigation efforts.
All right. That's Governor Noem. That's her rationale. Let me just share with you one other piece of news here, and we'll get Dr. Kengor's take, and you can sound off too. Arkansas. All right, they just became the latest state to pass a bill saying that that only biological females could compete in female school sports. That I think that's completely sane. I think it's completely right. Again, only biological females can compete in female schools. And I hope this doesn't sound politically incorrect or I'm hurting anybody's feelings here, but I think there's a certain amount of justice in this. Here's more detail from 5 News in Fayetteville. Listen.
Governor Asa Hutchinson signing a controversial bill tonight that would ban transgender girls from playing school sports based on their gender identity. It's called Fairness in Women's Sports Act, and it applies specifically to transgender girls in elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and in colleges. Now, there is no mention of transgender boys in this bill. Supporters say it's not identity but biology that determines someone's athletic ability, while critics say it isn't grounded in science and it discriminates. Governor Hutchinson releasing a statement explaining his decision. It says in part, quote, "This law simply says that female athletes should not have to compete in a sport against a student of the male sex when the sport is designed for women's competition."
All right. My guest, Dr. Paul Kengor. Doctor, you heard both the governor, you heard what happened in Arkansas as well. Your take on that?
Well, you know, Drew, it's such a sad testimony of our cultural insanity that you would feel the need to apologize for the assertion that only biological females should compete in female sports.
But you know why right? I say that? Let me just jump in on that point, because you know there are. I've had calls from parents who've got children that are trans, and my heart goes out to them. It's a tough issue for the parent. Right. I mean, you're the father of eight. You know, if one of your kids, you want to always approach everything with compassion and love, but it's just irrational and illogical to think that you can allow a man to run on a female. A team and not be the dominant athlete there, win the scholarships and do an injustice to these females.
Well,
but Drew, I'll let you pick it up.
Where is their compassion, okay, for the girl in Connecticut who's going to lose D1 scholarships to pay for her college education because mm-hmm. she's consistently and always finishing second.
That's right.
To a biological male who continues to beat her in all of these tracks. Where's the compassion for that girl and for her family? And that girl and her family are so beaten up in social media and everything else, they can't even stand up for themselves, right? Where's the compassion for them? Okay, I mean, this is the dictatorship of relativism here. Okay, I mean, and the Christine Noem, she's very smart, and you know, she's taken the position that she's taken. I'm about at the point, Drew, where I say, you know what, if you're a governor, you're a senator, you're Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, whoever, you know what, forget about it. Let the liberals have their world. Okay, and if their kids lose scholarships and everything else, if their girls get beat in these sporting events, if they get picked up and body slammed, right, on the rugby field, if they get hurt in karate and weightlifting and anything else, you know what? It's the world that they wanted. It's what they're demanding. They're going to suffer. And I know people are saying, no, Ken Gore, you can't do that because our kids lose too, right? And that's where these legislators feel like they have to step up and be bold and try to fix it. But it's just, this is the dictatorship of relativism, right? Where Pope Benedict Ratzinger talked about redefining simple things in those days, maybe life, maybe marriage. He probably wasn't even thinking of 71 different gender options on Facebook, right? But it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, it's a very strange time in which we live right now. It really is. It's quite concerning. I mean, the governor there is under a lot of pressure after her changes basically gutted the bill that would ban, you know, males from being on these girls and women's teams. But I understand why she caved personally. I mean, she's been such, as I said, a stalwart on so many other issues. Do you think it's because of the big banks that have a presence in her state or because of the NCAA?
Oh, yeah.
Or what do you think motivates this change? What motivates people selling out their own belief system?
This is woke corporate interests. These are people used to think that big companies, right, and boards were conservative because they cared about making a buck. Now they're all filled with recent college graduates, and that's who creates this stuff. And they will punish and destroy your city and state if you go against them on their cultural revolution. I remember driving through Indianapolis about 5 years ago after the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. What happened with the pizza shop there? Mike Pence was governor after Oberg fell, and I saw hanging from one of the biggest buildings in Indianapolis the biggest rainbow flag I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
Bigger than even the one that was draped over Foundry United Methodist Church, Hillary Clinton's church in Washington, D.C. And my wife said, "Look at that flag." And I said, "That's a white flag of capitulation."
Wow.
That's Indianapolis telling the world, please don't destroy us because we disagree with you on sexuality.
Well, Paul, thank you. Always good to have you here. Check out Dr. Paul Kengor, his latest book, of course, The Devil and Karl Marx, and follow him at The Spectator and a lot of other places. Hey, we'll talk again soon. Have a blessed Holy Week, if for some reason we don't talk, okay?
All right, Drew. You
take
care.
God bless you. That's Dr. Paul Kengor.
God bless.
The Chaplain, straight ahead. I'll be right back.
It's so very encouraging to hear from our listeners who benefit from our programming. I want to invite you to join the St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society. Your ongoing monthly gift is a gift that keeps on giving.
Learn more at relevantradio.com/Joseph.